driving, Ghent, New York, serving children and adults with special needs. For more information, applications, or to volunteer, call 518-672-4202 or online at high-n-mighty.com.
All right, when you hear the bell, shoot the clown in the mouth first. When a pop or blow up, wins a prize. Get ready to get set.
Okay, shoot it.
Oh, use that finger, buddy. Oh, boy. Let's go. We got a winner.
This is Sam Sebring, WGXC Town Recorder from Athens, inviting anyone who wants to make radio to come to the WGXC studio and get training about using a recorder. In no time, you can be recording concerts and events in your area for broadcast on WGXC 90.7 FM, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties and beyond. Contact Tom at WGXC.org.
The Hudson Pride Foundation aims to foster awareness of LGBT issues, work for equality, be a positive resource for the community, and award scholarships to Columbia County High School seniors for college tuition. Each year, the Hudson Pride Foundation organizes Hudson Pride Festival in Hudson, and this year's event is Friday, June 17th, Saturday, June 18th, and Sunday, June 19th in Hudson. Friday's events include a sunset cruise with DJ Lisa and a moonlight cruise with DJ Gio. Saturday, there'll be a parade down Warren Street beginning at noon and a party at Clubhouse Sinking in the evening. Sunday is Family Pride Day with a free carnival on Warren Street and performances from Uncle Rock, the Ramblin' Jug Stompers, and the Bindlestiff Family Circus. Go to HudsonPride.com for complete details on all the Hudson Pride events this year.
The Elks Flag Day Parade will be held on June 11 in Hudson, New York. The parade is an annual event that honors the American flag and our veterans. The celebration begins at 10 a.m., and the parade steps off at 2 p.m. and marches down Warren Street. The event is organized by the Hudson Elks Lodge number 787 and the Flag Day Parade Committee. For more information, visit HudsonElksFlagDayParade.com.
Hear that? That's spackle being mixed with a spackle knife. It's one of the many exciting sounds happening off-air to get much more exciting sounds on-air. There are always projects to keep this station in tip-top shape and maybe growing, so if you'd like to help in this endeavor, email Kaya, K-A-Y-A, at WGXC.org. I'm not Kaya. Good morning. This is At Issue, and we are on WGXC 90.7, broadcasting from Acra. We're in the Hudson studio, and we want to thank you for joining us this morning. I'm Victor Mandolia, and my co-host today is Manda Weintraub.
Good morning.
And we're going to be joined by Common Council President Don Moore in a few minutes. But before we get going, I wanted to just talk about some elections that happened yesterday. As most of you know, there were school budget and school board votes throughout the state. But all of the local school districts had had votes yesterday, and there were couple of surprises, so we'll go over that. In Taconic Hills, Germantown, Chatham, and New Lebanon, the budgets passed in each of those districts. At Ichabod Crane, that budget went down, was voted down, and apparently that school board is going to put that budget up for a revote. Seems that a lot of the issue with that budget had to do with football, and it's a little bit over my head, but
The one that we wanted to talk about for a minute is the Hudson School District. Apparently, that budget went was defeated by 1,249 against the budget and 424 for. So almost 3-1 on that budget vote. But immediately following the tallying of the vote, the school board met and passed the budget anyway. Pretty outrageous, really. So the budget for next year, even though the voters voted more than 2-1 against, will be the same budget that was defeated. And it's there were four members of the board voting for to impose that budget: Emil Meister, Mary Daly, Jeff Oddy, and Peter Maranti. The three voting against the proposal or the budget were Peter Meyer, Elizabeth Fout, and Jerry Chapman. So it seems as if it's a, the way I compared it yesterday is like a Soviet style election. Three board members up for election and three people on the ballot. So obviously each of those people won, and a budget that, whether you vote yes or no, it's the same budget. Really kind of outrageous. And I don't know what to say about it. I think certainly people need to should show up at the next board meeting and make their unhappiness known to the board. It's although it'll be a, I guess it'll be a new board next time. Emil Meister, who is the current board president, did not run for re-election, and but I think we'll be at the next board meeting. Certainly, people should express their displeasure at having exercised and wasted time on a vote that meant nothing. In fact. So I wanted to introduce our guest this morning. We have Council President, that's Hudson Common Council President, Don Moore, with us.
Good morning.
And so there's an article in today's Register Star about the LWRP having been sent back to the city, and there was a council meeting last night where the house was packed. People showed up to see what was going to happen next, and I'll let Council President Moore sort of give us a report on what happened last night, and then we have some questions for him.
Surely. I think I'm going to just jump right into what is probably the most difficult and controversial aspect of last night, and that was my decision that the LWRP and the generic environmental impact statement would not be released for a couple of weeks to the public.
Can we just during this the course of this discussion, we're going to start using a lot of acronyms and stuff, but we have to realize that not all of our listeners understand what we're talking about.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The LWRP is the Local Waterfront Redevelopment Program, and the GEIS is the Generic Environmental Impact Statement. Maybe I'll back up a second. The two are considered, although they are two volumes, each about an inch and a quarter thick, more than 300 pages each, they are considered one document. The LWRP is the first document. It is the action that causes or requires a generic environmental impact statement. In other words, if a jurisdiction, a city like Hudson, proposes to take an action like changing the zoning for the entire city, or considering different truck routes as we are doing, these have environmental impacts, and so they are subject to the State Environmental Quality Review Act, SEQRA, and hence it's almost an automatic action that you need to have an environmental impact statement or a generic environmental impact statement, which covers a large area. So that the council now has before it, in the last few stages of consideration, the GEIS and the LWRP. Now the The first set of actions that the council will take is to consider the GEIS. The reason that is first and not the LWRP is that if indeed the GEIS is not adopted, then the LWRP can't proceed. So the council is now in the process of considering that. Now, what this means in general is that we have just received back from the Department of State a series of reviews and comments on the LWRP and on the GEIS. And there's been some question about what what that actually means. Did the state? It has been suggested that this process at this point is an approval by the state. Indeed, that's not the case. The best way to put this is that the Department of State has informally reviewed and discussed modifications that might be made, either as a consequence of public comments or a consequence of their own review of our documents. And then they pass these comments back to us. We put them all into the documents that we have now before us, the LWRP and the GEIS. And then the last action is the council consideration. The council is the lead agency. It is the most important agency of the government that has the final determination on both the GEIS and the LWRP. So that, as I say, back to my earlier, my first comment about whether there was about the difficult decision that was made last night, or just before last night, was that because we have about a 2 or 3 week period before a next council meeting at which we will discuss the council's own opinions about the first the GEIS and then the LWRP. I thought the state law, public officers law, does allow for documents that are under consideration but are proposed and unfinished to be considered privately by the agency that is involved in making decisions about them. And that, in this case, that's the council. Balanced with this and against this in some respects was the interest of the public in seeing the documents. And indeed, I am caught right in the middle because I think that because this is one of the most important decisions the council will ever make, I really wanted to be sure that that the members of the council all felt that they had a chance to review it themselves. If they certainly wish to seek other opinions, that is, you know, that's their prerogative. And then to release the documents to the public fairly soon, probably within 2 weeks, because I do think that there's absolutely nothing wrong with seeing the documents, because I think, frankly, that the city will be well served by them. I'll stop there and see if you have any questions.
Well, but clearly you know that there's a clamor of, you know, people who are saying we want to see the documents. So could you just explain why the decision was made, and if there isn't, how do I put this? Certainly the people want to know. The people mm-hmm. want to see the document. So could you just explain a little bit more in depth, like what the reason behind having the council consider it without having the public see it in advance?
Well, I'm not sure that I can give you a thoroughly clear explanation. I think that the council has the right, according to the law, to see this themselves. And I think that we all, I'm a member of the council, we all have a responsibility to know, to make decisions based on our own review of the documents, not others' reviews of them. Now, others' reviews of them can be legitimate, but I do think that the council needs to know that it has grasped the documents themselves and made decisions based on them, on their own review of them. And it's been, frankly, it's been 20 years that this process has been going on, and I think that that 2 weeks is not too long to wait. And I can't, you know, I would be more than happy to release it if the council were disposed, if they thought that they had seen everything they needed to see and were ready to make decisions. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the case, because these are all of the public comments and the draft responses to the public comments are in these documents. Conclusions that are proposed conclusions to the questions of environmental, social, economic impact are in these documents. And there are some questions that I want us all to thoroughly examine as reflectively and deliberately as we can. And think of this as a sort of an extended council meeting where the council gets to sit and talk about the documents. People can observe it, but they're not there to participate in the discussions. Insofar as these are major and complicated decisions, that's the way I see this particular process at this point.
I mean, one thing that people should understand as well is that there were only four physical copies of the document at City Hall last night, and they had to be divvied up by lot to council members. So just the printing of the documents alone is a problem for distribution. Although I guess at some point there'll be electronic copies available.
Right. Yeah. I hope this doesn't seem too sort of precious, but I really do think it's important for all of the council members to have the physical printed copies of the documents. And I want them to be able to have them in their hands, to take them home, to mark them up, to make notes about them. We were in a time crush. The state finished its review, Department of State finished its review, its informal review, on Friday afternoon. We then tried to get the documents printed by our planners, BFJ, that have the capacity to do this, in New York. And they got the process started of printing 600 to 700 pages and binding it in two documents. But it's an expensive process, and they could only ship four up here, one for me as well, by Tuesday morning. And by tomorrow, and I'm assured this morning, they will have the remaining copies so that all the council members will have them tomorrow, Thursday. But part of it is just, part of the problem is just the practicalities of trying to get something done in a hurry. I said last night that a lot of this process is hurry up and wait. You know, we had a two-month public comment period that ran from January 2010 to March 2010 that we thought would be over relatively quickly. The comments and drafting responses to them took a much longer period of time. Once we sent the documents to the Department of State in September or August, we thought they would be done within 2 months. That took now close to 8 months, and then all of a sudden you have, you know, you pass a point where the documents can be sent to the council, and there's a council meeting, and so we rush to try to get everything together so that it could be presented to them. There's one other thing I did want to say here too, and it's a point of, another, I consider it a point of principle. I would love to be able to sit here and tell you both a great deal about this document, because I think that the sum of it and the work that's been done, both as a consequence of the public comments, as a consequence of the council's comments last summer and their concerns, as a consequence of the work of the Department of State and advocacy groups, that this is a much, much stronger document. It's a much more detailed document. It's a much more sophisticated document in terms of regulation, in terms of the controls that people will want to see, in terms of the opportunities to have both address both social justice issues, which is to say getting the trucks off the streets, and issues of having access for the use of the port. And how that happens. There is no, I've said this on the show before, I can say it now as well. There is no longer a preferred route to the waterfront. Yes, there is a causeway and there is an alternative, but there is no preferred route, and that was something that was particularly desirable. But beyond that, because I have decided that we would not release these documents, I can't then turn around and, unfortunately, as much as I would love to, since I've had about 6 hours to read the documents now myself, I would love to tell more about this, but I think that would be prejudicial to other news organizations that also have a strong interest in knowing what's in the documents.
So we're going to take a break. Just so everybody knows, we are here with Common Council President Moore. My guest co-host today is Manda Weintraub, and we'll be right back with At Issue on WGXC.
We better come up with a few songs.
And we're back. So,
I have some questions, which is, in terms of the documents themselves, perhaps a little history for myself and for other listeners who haven't read through all 600 and 700 pages, just some background material. The Local Waterfront Revitalization Program, I understand it is both a plan and a program. And I wonder if you could elucidate for us a bit what the plan and program are as it relates to the city of Hudson.
Certainly. It is a program because it actually prescribes projects that should be undertaken. It prescribes zoning changes that are the heart of the document, and those zoning changes are meant to redefine how the city relates to its waterfront. Which is to say that the industrial areas that are broad and significant on the entire waterfront from the South Bay all the way up to the North Bay are substantially restricted, and there are no longer any industrial zones on the waterfront. Now, what that means is that that we've created additional new zones that are called either core riverfront or recreational conservation and recreation, and these zones are meant to provide the opportunity for different kinds of either recreational or mixed use development on the waterfront, and these plans relate to earlier plans that the city has passed, the comprehensive plan, the vision plan, both of which were prescribed, say, on the waterfront between the Ferry Street Bridge and the Old Dunn's Warehouse, the part of the waterfront that is between the railroad tracks and the developed park. That's a significant area for some sort of mixed-use development, housing, shops, restaurants. Then there's the South Bay and the North Bay. These are very desirable areas for development for recreation. The Columbia Land Conservancy is developing a plan for the use of the North Bay area and the landfill that would connect all the way north to the conservancy, so that you could actually hike or bike right out of the north end of the city all the way up into Greenport and beyond, and then the South Bay. Now, the South Bay is in some ways more desirable because it's central to the development there, but we need to own it or have a permanent easement over it so that we control it. B, we need to determine whether or not and to what extent it needs to be remediated, and then we need a plan for its development as a recreational sort of heart of the south end of the city. But there are other programs in the document. For example, There's a project to extend a bridge from Promenade Hill into Franklin Park so that you could literally walk or come down Warren Street, walk up Promenade Hill, and then walk straight over a bridge down across the railroad tracks down into the South Bay without having to go down Front Street and around the either the Ferry Street Bridge or the Broad Street Crossing.
I've never heard that term. What's the Franklin Park?
Franklin Park is the park that's just over Promenade Hill. It's where the old it's the small parkland area that's to the east of the state boat launch parking area.
To the east.
Yeah. If you come across the Ferry Street Bridge,
yeah,
and you look to your right, that's mm-hmm. Franklin Park.
Hmm. I've never heard that before. Okay.
But I think another point is that the LWRP is a vehicle, and this is a question that Amanda asked earlier, is a vehicle for pursuing federal and state grant monies that can be used for these particular projects and programs. And they are, and a number of them are prescribed in the LWRP. And indeed, the Department of State looks forward to our applying for funding for these activities, because that's indeed one of their interests in having us adopt a local waterfront redevelopment program, is so that we can actually implement it, and they have grants that as well as the State Department of Environmental Conservation for the various kinds of development we want to pursue.
Excellent. Now, I have a question, too. You talked about the South Bay area, mm-hmm. And that the town needs to either purchase it or get an easement, which is, of course, a right of use, grant an easement back to Holcim. So I guess what you're saying is, and correct me if I'm wrong, we are going to acquire title to South Bay in exchange for allowing a direct industrial corridor to go from the port back to the quarry, is that correct? Or
yes, up to a point. I'll correct one technical term. It's not an industrial corridor; it's a transportation corridor.
Thank you.
And these are peculiarities that are important in zoning. If I'm telling people more than they already know, please forgive me. The Holcim, which is the Swiss cement company.
And that's Holcim, just people always are wondering what we're talking about. It's Holcim is a Swiss conglomerate that owns the cement property, the cement plant, and the property surrounding it, all the way up to the quarry in Greenport.
They own 1,800 acres, which is, as Victor has pointed out, a contiguous piece of property that includes everything from the port all the way up to the quarries that are adjacent to the Calaruso quarries on Beecraft Mountain. Now, the city's been negotiating for a while with Holcim over these competing interests. Their interest is in having a truck route that where they could ship where a private contractor, O&G Industries, can ship stone aggregate from the Holcim mines out on barges out of the port. Currently, the only road where they have access to for this transportation by truck from the mine to the port is through the city. This is the infamous Columbia Street truck route that in part traverses the state truck route, but then south of 3rd Street between South and Front, and then down Front Street to the port is all on city streets. These are narrow city streets. They are city streets that are where there are children and families and indeed now businesses, music businesses. It's a diverse corridor, and everyone in that corridor would love to see these trucks off the streets.
Our studio here is on Columbia Street, so when you hear the trucks going by, that is because the truck route is right outside our door.
Yes. As is the train route, but that's one we don't seem to object to.
It's charming. The train is charming.
It is. It is. So that we are dealing here with trying to work out competing interests. The cement company, formerly St. Lawrence Cement, has owns this property, and there is an old railroad bed that goes from the mines straight through Greenport into the Hudson, the property within Hudson, and to the port. They have expressed an interest in a strong interest in putting a road through there that would allow their trucks to traverse there. That seems from one view to be the obvious answer to getting the trucks out of the city and getting the trucks off the city streets and getting them away from running through residential neighborhoods. However, of course, life is complicated, and this question is complicated as well by the fact that there are many strong strong interests in the city and in the area in general who would like to see the South Bay in some fashion restored as an ecological parkland. Of course, the causeway, so-called, as it runs through the city jurisdiction, within the jurisdiction of the city, runs through the South Bay. So there have been alternative suggestions that a route be constructed around the north end of the South Bay through what is called the LB property. For a long while, that has been discussed, and indeed, there are alternatives within the LWRP at this point that call for that to be the final route for trucking, if the property can be obtained, if the money can be found to build that particular route from 9G to the waterfront.
Let me jump in and ask, is there an analysis in the environmental impact statement for an alternative route through South Bay?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
In the generic environmental impact statement, there were alternatives considered, both there were alternatives for the truck route, and there were also considerations of whether or not and what sort of remediation needed to happen if the causeway was used for a truck route. And one of the particular points that some of us made, that I made, was that if that were to happen, there needed to be substantial regulation of that road, so that we knew that it would be, if it were used, that it would be subject to current best practice in terms of the integration of a road into a sensitive wetland. I think that's an issue that still needs to be elaborated further. It is one that has been important to a number of us. It's important to the Department of State. I will say that much. And I think that it is in terms of the sort of cultural and an economic social contract that we make out of this LWRP, there is probably no single goal other than getting the trucks off the streets that is more central to the success of an acceptance of this LWRP within the community.
So we're going to stop just for one second. This is Victor Mandolia. My co-host today is
Amanda Weintraub.
And we're here with Common Council President Don Moore from the City of Hudson. I wanted to just let everybody know briefly that if you enjoy listening to At Issue and you would like to be a supporter of the show on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/@issue, spelled out.
ATISSUE, facebook.com/@issue. And we have archives of all of the shows there. We've got we give you an advance notice of who's going to be on the show next. And so it's a great place to just find, you know, get all of the information and archives of the show. You can also get archives of the show at wgxc.org. So here we are at issue with Council President Don Moore. We'll be back to the conversation.
Thank you.
Another question. A concern seems to be that there is a lot of toxic waste in South Bay at this point, and there's concern about how it's going to be removed and who has responsibility for removal. So maybe we could discuss that for a minute or two.
Yes. There are a couple of sort of two tracks going on. There has always been a concern that we really are not clear about the level of toxicity or the character of toxicity in the South Bay, both because of dumping that has occurred in the past, right at the South Bay, and because of the topography of the escarpments that feed from the Beecraft Mountain and the city down into the South Bay. In other words, water runs down a couple of escarpments into the South Bay. What we've started to do is that with the Corps of Engineers and at the initiative of some of the local advocates, Chris Reed and Friends of Hudson, we put together with the city an initiative to have the Corps of Engineers begin a study of the potential levels of toxicity at the South Bay. At this point, no one really knows whether and to what extent it's dirty down there. The Corps of Engineers, we're asking them, they have not yet agreed, but we think we have reason to believe that they will pursue a first phase study of the toxicity. That would be what's called a literature search. They're not actually going on the grounds and testing it. They would be trying to find out what industries were surrounding it and whether or not there was any official findings of toxicity, whether or not those industries would have had the potential to deposit anything there. Scenic Hudson has also done some very interesting work in gathering information on the studies that have been done. There's been some study on water flow hydrology. There was one study that was done on some of the ecological impact by Hudsonia. So the work is beginning, but it's that particular research is a substantial project in itself.
How long will that research take? Is there any idea of a timeline?
I wish that there were. We started with the Corps of Engineers, and they could do a larger study. It might be that we would want to pursue a completely independent track on that research. One of the hurdles has been, of course, that we don't own the property or have access to it, and one of the negotiated settlements that's embedded in the LWRP is to actually obtain that access either through ownership or easement, so that we can actually get someone out there to poke in the ground and find out, you know, what's there. But I can't because that would take applying for grants and putting money together and plans. It has to be at least a couple of years, if not five years.
So one of the things that many people have called for or are interested in is the potential ownership of the Hulsum dock, the deep water port dock, so-called deep water port dock. What's your position on that, and what do you think that's actually a reasonable goal, and is it doable?
Well, it's two that you have asked two of the right questions. Is it a reasonable goal? Yes, it's a very reasonable goal. Is it doable? That's much less certain, because it involves the question of of the fact that it's privately owned, and that and that at this point, the owner, Holson, has not expressed any interest in selling it. So the alternatives for us are relatively slim. Would be to the one alternative would be to exercise eminent domain. And the unknown factor there is what would the total costs be, both the cost of establishing a purchase price and then the cost of litigation, and does the city have those resources, and if and is it in the city's interest to dedicate the level of resources that would be necessary to that particular end. I think it would be quite wonderful if that port were under our control. We could make it. We could develop it more for multiple shipping purposes, commercial shipping purposes. I think it could be particularly important to the economy of the city. But there's a great deal that falls between the shadow and the act in terms of trying to realize that goal.
One of the things that I think is often left off of the discussion table is that perhaps the county could purchase it. I mean, you know, we very often are only talking about the city purchasing the dock, but there is clearly an interest for government to own that property, and the county would have more resources and perhaps the more certainly. If we were talking about using that port for the shipping of agricultural products, I mean, clearly that is an advantage for the county and would work with the county's total economic development. So, do you know if there have been ever any discussions about the county purchasing the dock?
Not to my knowledge, although I think it's certainly a laudable idea to pursue. And I think that from a point of view of economic development, we are watching the county begin to acknowledge to some greater extent that Hudson is a key to the future economic development of the county. But that's a condition that's really only a couple of years old at best. Whether or not the county's interest begins to mature in our direction is really open to speculation. Mm-hmm. But it's a great idea.
Do you have another?
I guess I also wanted to ask about, and I don't know if you can talk about this because you can't talk about what's in the documents yet, but I was thinking about sewer overflow issues and about wastewater management and how that fits in. Because we've been concentrating on South Bay.
Well, that's actually easy to answer and completely open because it's a separate issue from the LWRP. The city has over the last couple of years, and actually will complete, I think this August, I think we're on track to do that, a complete overhaul of our sewage treatment system, which is to say combined sewer overflow. We have the ability to. One of the difficulties with combined sewer overflow is that you are not just taking water that's naturally given off by excesses of rain or moisture, but you may also with the wrong systems, which we had once upon a time, have that discharge mixed with human waste and that's no longer the case.
So let's just back up for a second because a lot of people won't understand what combined sewage overflow is. So in the city of Hudson and in most older sewage systems in cities that were built, hundreds of years ago, the rainwater sewers and the sewers that carry waste, human waste, they flow into one pipe. And at points of storms and heavy rainflow, often the sewage treatment plants that handle the waste are overwhelmed by the amount of water that's coming into it, and it puts out raw sewage because it simply can't contain the amount of water. It's so it there were often overflows that put raw sewage into the river, and that was why that was why the city was under a consent order to upgrade their system, and which will be completed in August. I just want because sometimes we talk over the listeners, and we want to make sure that you understand what we're talking about.
We were going ahead too quickly on that. I appreciate the clarification.
But the extension of the sewer line is going throughout the waterfront. So that when there's future development, there'll be additional public restrooms, et cetera.
Well, there's also there are three sort of parcels down on the South Bay waterfront. One is the old what's in as the old CAS building. One is the current LB building. That the CAS building is 100,000 square feet. The LB building is 300,000 square feet. And then there is the section of the waterfront that I described earlier. It's bounded by the railroad tracks, by Broad Street, Water Street, and the Ferry Street Bridge, which is also a parcel that's open for development. All of those could be served by the current sewage, the upgraded sewage system. There could be mixed development in there that would be adequately served by them.
Apparently, the water treatment plant has such a large capacity that we even have the ability to take in sewage from, you know, like when septic systems are pumped out and things like that, that companies will be able to come and dump their sewage there for a charge. The city would actually make money on accepting more sewage than what flows into the system. But
that's what's called infrastructure, in loose terms. I mean, there is the infrastructure there for development within the city, and that's particularly important. It's something we have to offer developers, and something we can say on applications for grant funding and the like is that indeed, it's. It's completely up to code.
We talk about everything here at Issue, including sewage. Isn't it exciting?
Well, but we are very ecumenical because you also talk about other people's sewage.
So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is At Issue on WGXE.
Let's see, what do we got?
10 minutes.
And we're back at Issue on WGXE.
Well,
I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Amanda Weintraub.
I'm Don Moore.
I have another question, Don, not to put anyone on the council on the spot, but I have heard concerns that the existence of a transportation corridor through South Bay is going to give Wholesome a platform to renew their cement plant permit application. And I wanted to ask this question.
It is because of the past behavior of the company, because they did wish to install this completely outrageous plant and port facility. There's reason to be concerned. I can say a couple of things. One of the initiatives that has been in the LWRP for a number of years now is a potential agreement with Wholesome that they would convey title to us to half of the area of the current port. In other words, that the current port area is 14 acres. They would give us half of that, 7 acres. The second is that, I can talk about this, I think, generally. There is stronger language in the LWRP that that states that there will not, that the city will not consider any sort of cement manufacturing facility or ancillary facilities such as an upgraded port, and that language is in the LWRP, and I'm very pleased with that language because we are allowing certain modest levels of shipping out of the port, and we want to do whatever we can to discourage and not support any assumption that port could be developed into the sort of facility that was proposed by St. Lawrence prior during the early years of 2000, and that was denied by the so-called Greenport consistency decision.
So that's news here. That's what that is something that hasn't been announced before. Is that?
I think it's fair to say that is news. I think that we have it was our intention, but I think we're making it clearer in the document that is the case.
Great.
So that it's everyone's understanding that a cement plant project violates New York's coastal policies and the town of Hudson's policies, the city of Hudson's policies.
I can't speak for the state, because the state's policies actually would reflect our policy. And until the LWRP is completed, I can't speak for the state. But certainly, yes, it would violate our policy.
Okay. Thank you.
So we have about 5 minutes left. Is there anything on other issues that you wanted to discuss and let people know about what's coming up, or is there anything else about the LWRP that you think that we haven't touched upon that people should know about?
Let's see. I think I'll just finish up a little on the subject. The LWRP has proven to be, and for all the right reasons, a painfully long process. But I do believe, can see the end by September. And that is indeed, if the council approves. I am the president of the council, but I am not the council, and I would not speak for them. But I think that this is a document that comes, that has grown organically, not to say that there isn't some controversy, or not to say that there's some questions about it. But I do think that it's a document that will be well regarded, because it really will change the face of Hudson. It will improve its chances for economic development and for recreation on both sides of the city, and I think that. I'm actually looking forward to the point within a very short period of time when this is discussed and reviewed more widely than it can be right now, and I think I'll leave it at that.
What else is on the horizon for the council coming up?
Well, there isn't. What have we got in the near future? I think we have. We certainly have a summer that's coming upon us. I think that we are looking forward to both the events in the park that will be the Wednesday concerts that have been underwritten by the city. The major music festival that's going to happen in mid August, I think, is an event to look forward to. I think otherwise, we have
Flag Day coming up,
Hudson Pride weekend. Yeah, I mean, I think the other, and we have, and I, it's another program entirely. But of course, the other major issue that we have before us is taxes, and tax assessments. And I will just say quickly that I do hope that everyone in the city will cooperate as much as possible with GAR Associates in the tax assessment process that we have begun and that will conclude with a full city reassessment in 2012. I think the taxes and tax fairness is as important as any issue. It may be the most important issue in the city that, that touches everyone's lives, and that we have made a commitment to see that that we have a fairer process than we have ever had before, and simply put, a fair process.
So people understand, GAR Associates is the agency or the
if
the
you
company.
Live in Hudson, you have received it. It's an outside vendor that has worked in many jurisdictions: Claverick, Kingston, Rensselaer, Troy. They have a first class reputation for undertaking municipal jurisdiction, in our case, citywide reassessments. Everyone within the city should by now have received information from GAR saying that they would be coming to do house-by-house appraisals that will feed into, as I say, a total reassessment of the city. All new records, all new measurements, with a view to a more sophisticated and even-handed view of approach to assessments than I think we've had in a good long while.
There's a questionnaire that's been sent out to everybody, and people should understand that. Rather than ignore it, it's to their advantage to give a realistic assessment of their own of their properties. Because, I mean, I know, for instance, on mine, you know, my house is listed as having two bedrooms and it only has one bedroom. So there are ways of correcting the assessment which drives up your assessment. And it certainly, you have to be truthful, but you certainly should be giving a realistic accounting of the facilities on your property so that they can be counted and assessed properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, again, I want to just say thanks for listening to At Issue. My co-host this week has been Amanda Weintraub, and I want to say thank you to her for joining us. And thank you to Common Council President Don Moore from the City of Hudson for joining us today as well.
It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Coming up is Al Jazeera English at 11 o'clock. This is WGXC and At Issue. I just want to remind people, please join our Facebook page on Facebook. It's Facebook/At Issue, or you can do a search with the at sign and issue, At Issue, on Facebook. Victor Mendolia signing off for this week. We'll see you next week on At Issue.
Thank you.
That was very helpful to me.